Clarinetist and soprano saxophonist Kenny DeVern died Tuesday. He was 71. DeVern played music associated with the beginnings of jazz, but you wouldn't have called him a traditionalist because he also was at home playing modern jazz. This will give you a sense of his range. He made his first recording in 1954 at the age of 19 with Jack Teagarden. But in the 70s, he recorded a series of free jazz duets with Steve Lacy. In yesterday's obituary in the New York Sun, jazz critic Will Friedwald wrote, "In a career that stretched more than 50 years, DeVern was widely hailed for the beauty of his tone, for the facility on his instruments, and for his ability to compose solos spontaneously that were light and airy, but at the same time solidly swinging and well-grounded in the blues." In 1988, Kenny DeVern came to the Fresh Air Studios to perform and to speak with Terry Gross. Joining him was bassist Phil Flanagan and guitarist Howard Alden.
I want to welcome all of you to Fresh Air. And Kenny, let me ask you to introduce the first tune you want to play.
All right. This is a tune called Wrap Your Troubles in Dreams. I'm sure most of the folks out there know this one.
Featuring a live concert today with clarinetist Kenny DeVern. Kenny, you really sound terrific. Now, I want to ask you, a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, know you from the work that you did, the group that you co-led called Soprano Summit. Now, there was a time when you played soprano saxophone and other saxophones. I think you've kind of given that up, and you're really sticking with clarinet now.
Yeah, the clarinet's hard enough, Terry.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that why you gave up the other horns?
Yes. I just found that I was basically trying to do on a saxophone what I was doing on the clarinet, and really there are probably more saxophone players than clarinet players, and so I took the devil's advocate's position there, you know.
Did you ever take lessons or anything?
Oh, yeah. I went through the usual, run of teachers, and basically they taught me everything that I didn't need to know when it came down to what it is I wanted to really play.
They wanted to teach you a legit tone?
Basically, yeah. And the best way to hear, is to listen. The best way to learn is to listen.
We did a lot of listening to records when you were growing up.
Well,
and music.
Yes, a lot of records, but at the same time, I'm of an age most of the guys were still alive, the giants. You know, I'm talking about Coleman Hawkins, Charlie Parker, Lester Young, Pee Wee Russell, Bobby Hackett. Those guys were in the mainstream at the time. In fact, they were, a little younger than I am right now.
At the time, yeah.
So they were really in their prime. So to speak.
The first recording you made was with Jack Teagarden.
That's right.
Did a lot of older musicians take you under their wing because you were interested in the music they were playing?
Yeah. Those guys were very kind. I'm talking about people like Rex Stewart and Herman Autry, the trumpeter who used to play with Fats Waller. Sandy Williams, the trombonist. Red Allen hired me when I was 16 years old, and things like that. And not out of pity or anything. I think they just happened to like me and also didn't have to pay me as much as, let's say, the regular guys who were running around. But it was a great learning process, and I had the opportunity to be on the same bandstand as these guys and share their thoughts about, what is life like on the bandstand looking out onto the audience, you see.
Now, you never got trapped in any period. I mean, you could have, when you were coming of age, gotten really...
But I did. Oh, I did.
Earlier on, you
did,
yeah?
I did.
How
I
so?
Did. Well, I waved a New Orleans banner, I just said, in New York City, where a very slick form of Dixieland had been, glitzing the town. I went back to very early New Orleans players and said, this is where it's really at. You know what I'm talking about? Guys like Wooden Joe Nicholas and Albert Burbank. And they're wonderful players, and I would play these records for these guys who were basically studio Dixielanders, and sort of condescending also in the fact that they were doing it because, you could make a buck doing it. And when I played them these guys' recordings, for instance, they went, what, are you crazy? And I wasn't really. I mean, you have to play within a flavor, within a genre of anything that you do.
So after really establishing yourself as a New Orleans-style player, how'd you get out of that?
Very quickly. what did I do? Well, I just sort of evolved. I just tried to play as well as I could in any situation that I happened to be in. That's how I got out of it, basically.
But why'd you want to get out of it?
Because, I think it was crippling in the sense that it... it's like I was playing with one hand behind my back, tied behind my back. And I wasn't giving expression to what it is, what my potential was going to be, or could be, or maybe never would be, or will be.
Now, you had a real small part in The Hustler, right?
Very small. I was in the scene just before Piper Laurie cuts her throat. She's coming down in this big party scene where George C. Scott and... Paul Newman are about to take on the late Murray Hamilton, who plays he was rather a gay fellow, and they took him on, and we're going to clean him out in pool. And we were on an original cut, we were on for about almost 30 seconds on full screen as she comes down the stairs, and there we were, all playing. Roswell Rudd was on trombone and that. Dan Terry was the leader, and he did the arrangement of the tune that we played for 3 days in a row. Began to dream this tune. And Billy Bauer was on banjo, a wonderful guitar player. And Bunny Shawker was a drummer, and Jack Six was on bass.
And how many seconds are you left in The Hustler?
Now, just sort of like, if you don't look, you'll never see it.
Oh, we'll have time for one more tune.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we'd like to play a number. That's the title of the album, 1 Hour.
Yeah. Great. This is the James P. Johnson tune?
That's right.
Okay.